right in a second.
CITR podcast update number 1.
Work has begun on Canada's Information Highway. That's the state-of-the-art network that we're told will change everything from the way we do business to the way we learn. Without getting too technical, tell me how what you're working on is different from what's available to me right now.
So right now, if you want to listen to your favorite CITR program, you need to be listening to it on your radio live or streaming over the internet live. But with CITR podcasts, you'll be able to download your favorite show and listen to it whenever you want, on your computer or on your MP3 player.
I'm just thinking about that.
I know, it's pretty rad.
For more information, visit CITR.ca/podcast. Thank you for listening, and please be kind to robots.
You are listening to Sexy in Van City Radio on 101.9 FM, CITR.
Well, my father says you're nifty,
and you've heard of Baudelaire,
and we both agree that human rights abuses are unfair. You understand your feelings,
and you're not afraid to share,
and I think I could do something with your hair. You smell nice,
and you're groovy,
and we both like foreign movies. My mother says you have that touch of class.
Well, I can see a shining future
where we'll dialogue and nurture.
But there's one last thing I feel I need to ask. Do you take it in the ass? Do you take it in the ass? 'Cause you're beautiful and curvy, but unless you're kind of pervy, there's no way you and me are gonna last. Do you take it in the ass? Do you take it in the ass? When it comes to brains, you've got 'em, but unless you play the bottom, I'm afraid I'm gonna have to take a pass. Well, you're adorable, reliable, but is your anus pliable? That's the information that I need. Well, you would do it if you love me. If you're nervous, what about me? You'll be able to depth and speed. Do you take it in the ass? Do you take it in the ass? 'Cause I've ordered in a shipment of the relevant equipment. I've got lubricant and poppers and some brass. Do you take it in the ass? Do you take it in the ass? On this type of penetration, we can always take a correspondence class. You see, I'm not the kind of fella who can get off on vanilla. No, I need a little color in my sex.
Well, honey pie, it just so happens that I brought my day-glow strap on and some mescaline to heighten the effect.
Ready?
Do you take it in the air? Take it in the ass. Ooh, do you take it in the ass?
Welcome to Sexy in Van City Radio, 101.9 FM on CITR. Or maybe you could be one of our podcast listeners, but however you decide to spend the hour with us, we are very, very glad to have you. Well, it is the 5th annual Vancouver International Burlesque Festival from May 6th to the 9th, and we've got some amazing people coming to town. And one of these amazing people who is going to be here, if you have been following my tweets and if you've been following Facebook and our website, you'll know that I have a very special guest on tonight. She's a gorgeous, sexy, beautiful, smart, wonderful woman who's going to be doing a workshop there, performing and doing all sorts of lovely stuff. She's also the spokesperson for Leonard Nimoy's The Full Body Project as well. Lady Monster, welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you.
You're welcome. So, where are you right now? I know you're en route to Vancouver.
I'm in my hometown in San Francisco.
Oh, you are? Okay. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, flying in first thing tomorrow morning.
Lovely. And are you performing during the festival as well?
Yes, I'm performing on Friday night at the VIBFA showcase that starts at midnight, so technically Saturday. I'll be on the stage.
That sounds fantastic for the witching hour, which will be very lovely.
Uh-huh.
And it'll be starting off the festival with a bang, which I think is always really good.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and you're going to be in town doing some workshops as well.
Right.
So it's welcome to Vancouver early.
I know. It's my first time to be in Vancouver.
Well, we're really glad to pop that cherry.
Yeah.
So tell me a little bit about the Full Body Project.
This is a photo project. Leonard Nimoy takes the pictures. He's been a photographer since he was about 13. And he had just finished his Shekinah project.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a woman that was looking at the exhibit, and he was standing there. And she went up to him and said, you know, these are really beautiful. These women are really beautiful. But, you know, would you ever consider photographing a real woman's body with a lot of curves? And he goes, well, who did you have in mind? Did you have something in mind? And she said, well, the Fat Bottom Review in San Francisco, Big Burlesque. And so, she said me. And it was just the older woman that's in the photographs. She was the first model. And then he went looking for more models, and a friend of his suggested Fat Bottom Review.
Nice. And I was going to ask how he found you.
Mm-hmm. And so he gave the director, Heather McAllister, gave her a telephone call, set up the model shoot, and so it was funny, like she's just held auditions for new members into the troupe, and they did the photo shoot, the first one, and then I joined, and then she accepted my audition and brought me into the troupe like a couple weeks later, and then he said he wanted to do a second photo shoot, so I got to be part of that second photo shoot.
That's fantastic.
Yeah, and he's always been very warm and wonderful and very approachable. He sent all of the ladies, you know, a letter when it was being considered to become a book, and gave us his, you know, email address to stay in touch. And so I completely took him up on that offer to stay in touch with him, and he and I have become really good friends. And so that's how I get to get interviewed by Extra TV and The Insider, and by Zoe Wiseman for her Art Nudes blog, and New York Times. And
so kind of all over the place is what I'm hearing.
Yeah.
And am I your first one in Vancouver so far?
That I'm aware of, that I've actually spoken to, yeah.
That's awesome. No, I think it's great. I think it's really empowering for women. I think
definitely.
How has it changed you in terms of, had you done burlesque before you had done it with the review?
No, I had. I've always been a performer. Like my mother would put my sister and I up on the hearth of the fireplace in the living room and decked out in costumes, and we would perform for our huge family and all my aunts and uncles and cousins and grandparents, and they would fill the living room and we would entertain them.
So you've been doing this for a long time.
For me, it's just like every day. Like it's no big deal. Like I've been doing this all of my life. And but I didn't start being Lady Monster until 1992. And I was reading my own personal erotica and sexual stories allowed in like the basement of art galleries and coffee houses, and as in between band entertainment at punk shows and whatnot.
And how'd you come up with the name Lady Monster?
Actually, a friend of mine came up with it. The first time I ever did a poetry reading, then he was the host of the show, Arturo de Leon, and this is in Columbus, Ohio, where I'm from. And we were just sitting in a coffee house, like a 24-hour coffee house one night, and he was like, well, what's the title of your first book going to be called? I'm like, dude, I just started writing like a couple months ago. Like, I don't have a, I haven't thought of this, you know? And he goes, oh, you always have to be prepared. And he goes, you need to do something, you know, like, he goes, you walk into a room, you know, people look at you and they think, oh, what a nice, sweet young lady. And then you open your mouth and start to speak and you rip apart their conceptions like a monster. And he goes, you're this lady monster. And he goes, that's what you should call your book. And the next performance that I had was called the All-Girl Hoedown, and then it was a bunch of women performers and a variety of, you know, mediums up getting up on stage. And as I walked in there for my call time, they handed me this Hello, My Name Is sticker, and so I just put Lady Monster on it, and I made them introduce me that way. So that was December of 92,
so that's
the first time I used that.
That's fantastic. And was that, when you said the audition, was that the audition, because you're mentioning the Ho Show, the... I'm going to have you repeat that.
The bottom review. Uh-huh.
Thank you. And in regards to that, so since day one, basically, what made you decide to audition for burlesque to become part of a troupe?
I've always wanted to do burlesque, and I'd watch Gypsy, I'd watch all the variety shows, I'd That's Entertainment. I've always been a movie and music fanatic and dancing and tombs. Whenever my mother would tell my sister and I a bedtime story, she had sock puppets, she was running around the room and jumping and rolling around and had character voices. Like, it was so exciting. Like, we had this like personal theater in our bedroom. And so all those theatrics and stuff and being encouraged to really get into music and dance around and act it out, like, especially with dawning of MTV and watching David Lee Roth and all the amazing things that he did, you know, all the burlesquing that he did in his videos, then it's just something I've always had an affinity for. So when the burlesque revival came around, I think my first introduction to it was a magazine article about Dirty Martini and World Famous Bob. And then I started seeing a troupe in Columbus. I think it was Miss Kitty's Hot Box.
I like the name Meow.
I know. But she only wanted women that were trained dancers and of a certain size, so that they could all fit into the costuming and stuff and look the way that she wanted them to for her aesthetic. And so I knew that I wasn't going to be able to be part of that troupe. And it really broke my heart, you know, because it was like, this is what I'm having all of these people come up to me in town asking me, why aren't you part of this? This is so you. This is so what you need to be doing. And like, but I'm not allowed. I can't get up on stage. I can't do that. And so then it was just not too much longer when I moved to San Francisco, and then I started hearing about
Heather McAdams and
Heather McAllister
and
all of the wonderful, amazing things that she was up to, and I started following the troupe around like a lost puppy dog, like to all of their performances going, are you going to have auditions yet? Are you going to have auditions yet? When can I audition? When can I be part of the troupe? And so that was about a year and a half later, finally I got to, like, audition and be part of the troupe.
That's fantastic. And how has it changed? Have you found, what's the biggest change you found in yourself since you started doing burlesque?
I have grown in leaps and bounds as a performer, with my confidence and with my artistic and creativity, all of those abilities. Like, I never thought, I mean, I had to learn what a glue gun was. I had to learn what my neighbors are having a party, and one of them's not happy about this. I don't know if you can hear all the screaming happening. I had to learn, like, what everything was. Like, I'd never had that kind of crafting kind of experience. And then once I started doing it, I realized, wow, I'm really good at this. Like, I've got some really good ideas. And, you know, and sometimes I'm like, wow, that was a really bad idea.
So, in other words, it sounds like it's given you opportunity where just to trust and to play.
Exactly.
And find what works. And have you found in other areas of your life, has that been true as well, where by learning that through your art, through what you do in terms of as a craft, has that started to spread in other areas of your life?
Well, I've always been a producer. Mm-hmm. Like, when I was a kid, then I would always put together parties. You know, there'd be, you know, I'd always make sure it was boy, girl, boy, girl. And
you were the friend I should have had when I was a kid.
Yeah. So we would, I was always organizing big parties.
Mm-hmm.
And for all of my friends, every couple of months, I'd have to put together a new party. And then as soon as I, like, started out in the poetry scene, then I started putting together my own shows and doing, like, a monthly poetry reading. And then it morphed. I joined up forces with Don Pavelchek to make Circus of Cool, because he knew all of the jazz musicians in town, and I knew all the poets in town. And so we joined forces and made an event where we read poetry to the beat, and brought in dancers and circus performers, and it was amazing. And so, but I stopped producing when I came to San Francisco, and then I did a benefit for Heather McAllister, because she was dying from ovarian cancer, and she was dissolving the troupe. We felt that she was never going to perform again, And so I wanted to make sure that she had one more opportunity, you know, to, like, see everybody. And then it almost, like, right up to, like 2 weeks before the event, we were afraid it was going to be a memorial for her, that she was having a really hard time. And then we produced the event, and she was there. And she ended up living another year after that, because it brought it to people's attention that how much we loved her. Mm-hmm. And how much of an impact she had on our community. The place was packed to the rafters. We made almost $5,000 in one night.
Oh, my goodness.
All donated to her and her expenses. And so that gave me a lot of confidence and faith in myself and my community, and just all of that love that came forth that night. Then it's just always stayed with me. Like, whenever I want to produce another event, then I just draw on that experience, and that's something that she gave to me as well, and that burlesque has given me.
That's so fantastic. We actually just had an event in Vancouver. It was the Exotic Dancers for Cancer, which there are burlesque dancers as well as exotic dancers, and pole dancing for fitness as well, where everybody kind of fused together.
Mm-hmm.
And it actually started very similar roots to your event, actually, in that regard. Where it started, a dear friend of one of the organizers was quite ill, and she died a few months after the event, where they ended up were able to buy her a walker, and now they actually do it for Rethink Breast Cancer. So they've where they've continued, but same thing where everybody gets together, and I just love that feeling of community where people get together, and it's doing something that is really empowering for women as well. I think it's really key for the performers.
Mm-hmm.
It's really dear, especially when it's somebody dear to your heart, and as well making a huge contribution as well. I think that's fantastic.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Your class that you're going to be teaching on Saturday, tell me a little bit about that.
Well, it's my first time teaching the class. I just came up with the idea. It's called Positively Lovely.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one of the classes. The other class is called Tassels and Spinners DIY.
DIY.
Do it yourself.
Love it.
So it's because I'm Satan's Angel's protege. She's a legend of burlesque. She's
mm-hmm.
the queen and originator of fire tassel twirling. And she taught me how to make pasties with spinners in them, like from fishing tackle. And then also how to roll my own fringe to make tassels on my own.
Wow.
So I'm going to be teaching anybody that wants to learn the craft. I'll be teaching that from 3 to 4. And then Positively Lovely is from 4:15 to 5:15 in the same space right after that.
That sounds really, really fantastic.
Yeah. So it's and he swears by it that it will not damage your breast tissue. It'll actually strengthen your breast tissue. It will make it healthier. She swears up and down that it prevents breast cancer and loss of breast tissue if you use this kind of apparatus and tasseling.
I am very, 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 very curious. Would you be able to tell our listeners a little bit about it without giving away too much? Because they know they'll actually learn when they come, but just a little bit of as to what the theory is behind that.
It's all in the it's in the spinner,
mm-hmm.
and that it becomes part of the pasty.
Okay, let's paint a picture for them. So it's made of fishing wire, the spinner?
It's like what you use for, you can buy a whole package of them when you go to the bait shop.
Okay.
I'm really lucky. There's a bait shop right in the middle of San Francisco, and right at 6th and Mission for some reason, right in the middle of downtown.
I'm trying to visualize something like that in Vancouver.
And I can buy a whole bag of these for like $1.25. And they come in three colors, gold, silver, and black.
So which is perfect.
So I'm bringing a variety of spinner colors. I'm bringing all different kinds of fringe and fabric and patterns and sizes of patterns. So we're just going to have an hour of crafting and making our patterns and making our pasties and putting the pasties together and then rolling the fringe. And there's even more physics involved in the tassels. It, you have to figure out the length of the cord between the actual tassel and that hangs from the spinner, and you have to think of like the length of the tassel, you have to think of the weight of the tassel. All of that is in correspondence to your breast tissue, like how much of it, how much it hangs, like how firm it is, you know, like all of that comes together, and you have to decide how your tassel is constructed based on your body type. And you know, because like all these people just buy them from the store, you know, buy them from, you know, another burlesquer, and they don't take the time to think about the physics involved and how it affects your body,
mm-hmm.
and how much better of a tassel twirler you can be when you take all of that into consideration. So that's also going to be part of the lesson, is a lesson in physics.
No, I think that's really important because physics can be really sexy.
Mm-hmm.
But
oh, definitely.
And also taking care of yourself is really, really key. So it's interesting that you're doing that one first and then the Positively Lovely afterwards. So it kind of gets people almost thinking about themselves and self-care. And because by doing that, it just takes care of the audience as well.
Right.
Which is always good. Are you actually going to be teaching how to actually spin them?
I can give some tips. Yep, I've been. I can definitely give a little demonstration, and so people can see them in action.
People will be over the moon on that. So that's awesome.
But the positively lovely, that came to me just thinking about that there should be a workshop of empowerment for all body types, all genders, all ages, anybody that, and since I've been working with Fat Bottom Review and Full Body Project and Leonard Nimoy and Margaret Cho and the Sensuous Woman Show and her beautiful project, then it just really gets me to thinking about how many people in the world have body image issues and how few people, like how much judgment is being thrown out there regarding your physical characteristics and how much people hold on to that and really prevent themselves from loving themselves. And so I want to just try to like have people spend an hour and really think about the love that they can feel towards their body and try to like do some exercises and discussions where we keep it all on the positive about learning to love our bodies more.
I think that's really important, and I think it's good because I think if we don't love ourselves, how can we actually embrace someone else in our lives?
Exactly.
And
it comes through, you know.
It really does.
When you pass judgment onto somebody, no matter what kind of judgment that is, then it's also a judgment on yourself, and it bounces back and forth. And I just try to make people just stop for a minute and be a little bit more aware and cognizant of where is that coming from and how can we, like, start feeling better about one another.
Mm-hmm. And sometimes it takes time, but
it's always a work in progress.
It really is a work in progress because we do have our ups and downs, and as we continue to evolve.
We all have our bad days, you know, where we need to look towards each other, and I think the more often we have opportunities to have exercises and time to create a community of positivity, then we have more to look back on and say, you know, like stop for a minute and say, you know what, I'm just going to take a minute here and I'm going to reflect on what I've learned, and I don't have to feel as bad as I feel right now.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I mean, that's my hope. I hope that it gets through to somebody at some point in their life, you know, when they aren't feeling so good.
Yeah, I think the big key is to get them to stop and breathe.
Mm-hmm.
So if you think about that old expression, just stop and smell the roses.
Mm-hmm.
When you stop and you smell the roses, you're literally inhaling through your nose, which actually activates the front lobe of the brain. Which does cause you to think, which is very, very, very important. And then after that,
that's off your pleasure and happiness receptors, the oxytocin that comes out when you orgasm and you breastfeed and all of these wonderful things that this happy drug that resides in our bodies, you know, it lets that come out.
Yeah, it really does. What would you recommend to people who want to feel better about themselves? Like in terms of some things, some tips that perhaps they can do every day?
I think just like, you know, just stopping for a minute and closing your eyes and rubbing your hands across your body and picking a body part and say, you know, I'm grateful, I appreciate you, I find you lovely. Or you can say, boy, I'm really seeing my mom in my eyes today. You know, look at those crow's feet going on, you know, and I appreciate that I can see my mother in my eyes. I appreciate that gift that she has given me. And just think for a minute about what you're looking at, like what you're about to judge, you know, like just kind of stop for a minute and figure out where is this coming from? What is the story I'm telling myself?
I think that's fantastic. It's just, yeah, because with the stories, and it really does come down to words. What do we use? What do we say? And it can make all the difference in the world. It's interesting. It's my partner and I actually went through a period where we're actually just keeping track of how many times we swore during the day. And even though I do like the word fuck, it's got a nice hard CK to it, which I really like that sound. What's interesting though is the more I used it in a negative way, and more aware I was became of that, the less I tried to use it. Mm-hmm. We actually had to put a dollar in the loony jar every time. Uh-huh. So that makes a difference. But we have loonies up here instead of dollars. So,
okay.
Which is quite interesting, actually, because you can go a little loony with the loony if you're not careful.
It makes me think of Screaming Lord Sutch and the Loony Party in England. And
I don't think I've ever heard of that. I'm going to let myself allowed to slide on that segue. What is that?
Screaming Lord Sutch is a rock singer, and he had a band, and he did the song Jack the Ripper, and a lot of other crazy stuff. I think he even collaborated with. No, wait. So he came out in a coffin, like on stage, and then Alice Cooper did it.
I was just going to say that sounded like Alice Cooper.
Like he was kind of, you know, was it, Screamin' Jay Hawkins. I think he was the first guy to come out in a coffin, you know. So it's not like it was his thing, you know, but it was like he was very... He had, like, some similarities happening there with Screamin' Jay Hawkins, and then there's this white guy from England, the Screaming Lord Sutch, and he started getting into politics after rock and roll, and it was the Raving Loony Party, and so it was like, come be a loony, you know. I forget what their catchphrase was. But they still exist on the internet. Like, you can still find out all about them on the internet. It's hilarious.
That sounds fantastic. But in regards to back to the, just in regards to just what we say, it can really affect us in so many different ways.
Mm-hmm.
That's just so important. And I like the fact in terms of, with your workshop, you're mentioning actually physical contact, because we're actually supposed to get 12 hugs a day. They say if you get 12 hugs a day, you live up to 10 years longer. Like physical contact is so key.
Something else I wanted to talk about was all of the different ways that you can receive and give love. And I mean, if you think about it, you know, even when you're on Facebook and mm-hmm. you hit like, you know, that's
positive.
That is a positive affirmation that is giving somebody affection, even though it's in this like virtual reality way. That is something of how our society is changing with technology and the internet and the way that we communicate with one another. It's still like a squeeze of the hand, a pat on the back. It's something of saying, good job, you know, like, I appreciate this, I like this, this is cool to me, I love this, this is awesome. And so that's affection and love, and we have to think about that. Like, you can just be walking down the street and smiling to somebody, having a random conversation with somebody as you're walking down the street that you don't even know who they are. Like, that happened to me like 3 times today out running errands, you know, like and it just keeps a spring in your step and a smile, and you're like, boy, that person was so weird.
No, in Vancouver, that's pretty normal.
They were so funny.
No, I think that's awesome. And in terms of taking some of that stuff, in terms of just taking the time to smile, taking that time just to acknowledge things, I think it's really key as well as we bring that into our relationships.
Mm-hmm.
By both acknowledging ourselves and taking the time to take care of us, mm-hmm. but as well letting others take care of us sometimes too.
Yeah.
And trying to find...
It's hard. It's hard for so many people to let go for a minute and let someone else in and mm-hmm. let someone else do. You know, I've worked as a secretary and executive, personal assistant, whatever, in my professional life. You know, like all of my life. That's all I've pretty much done for a job, for income. And that's, you know, what really, that's been my biggest hurdle is somebody that can't let go.
Mm.
Like, they want to do everything themselves. And no matter how many times they approach them and say, you know, I'm here for a reason. I'm here to help you. You don't have to do this. You don't have to struggle with this. I want to work with you. I want to help you. And it's always a challenge to get them to let go.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think a lot that happens with a lot of people. They do so much on their own, including myself, that if somebody came up to me and said, you know what, you don't have to do that. I want to help you. I want to do that for you. I'm like, wow, would I really like sit back and drink tea and file my nails and say, you go right ahead. You know, like, I don't know if I could do that. Like, it's a challenge to just let someone else.
It is a challenge because I think we're very independent creatures, especially in male-female relationships in particular. Mm-hmm. I, as much as I applaud all of our forebears who fought for women's lib,
mm-hmm.
I really think that there is a difference in terms of men and women, and especially in terms of our roles, where sometimes we're not quite sure how to act anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes I think that affects on a lot of different levels, where we're, as women, sometimes not comfortable letting a male pay for things, because it's always that question, what does that mean? Do I owe him something? All that kind of stuff.
Uh-huh.
But at the same time, it's really important to let somebody do that sometimes. And
you just have to communicate and say, okay, what's going on here? Like,
mm-hmm.
What are you comfortable with? What am I comfortable with?
So setting boundaries and really being able to communicate to actually discover what those are. Because each relationship can be so different.
And that's a learning process, too.
Yes, it is. Even if you had it in one relationship, it evolves every time you have a different one.
Right. You always have to go into a new relationship new. And mm-hmm. that's a challenge, too. Like it's so easy to just pull out from the old hat of, like, well, this happened to me with so-and-so, and that happened to me with so-and-so. Therefore, this person's going to do both of them, you know? Like, and it's hard to, like, start with a fresh slate every time, but
mm-hmm.
it makes all the difference the more you're able to clean that slate and start over fresh and give that person a chance and not have those old ideas and old judgments coming up and, you know, like already creating a battle front for somebody to get through.
One of my favorite playwrights, John Patrick Shanley, actually has a play called Woman in Manhattan. And there's a really great line in one of the monologues in there about a girl who's broken up with her boyfriend, where she says, I'm going to paraphrase this very badly, but basically she feels like she's not worth 10 cents. And she feels like there's this big gaping hole in her, and she, quote unquote, could go out there and fill up this hole, but she'd rather just shrink back down to her own natural size, whatever that may be.
Mm-hmm.
Which I really like in terms of that, where it's important when we do have breakups, where we do take that time, and even when we are in a relationship, as much as we're letting somebody in, not to forget that we're married to ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
And every day trying to find at least two or three things that are really important. Like even this evening, I had a bath before I came here. So where it's just, I just need to kind of chill out and just wash the day away.
Mm-hmm.
And just little things like that where it's really important. And hung out watching Monsters and Aliens, of all things. But it was really cool.
You need to be able to tune out sometimes. Mm-hmm. That's how you take care of yourself,
mm-hmm.
you know, is by, you know, watching a
cartoons.
Silly movie and taking a bath, like all that is how you take care of yourself. And as long as we continue to recognize, well, how can I take care of myself? How can I stay, you know, with good energy level and keep pumping love into myself? And that love that you give to yourself is just going to just expand and grow with all of our other interactions that we have in the world. And like what you were saying a minute ago, like you have to be able to have that self-love before you can really be in love with other people and have a good foundation.
Mm-hmm. No, it's really, really key. It starts with that. And it starts with the dating yourself, and from there, marrying yourself, mm-hmm. which I think is really key, because sometimes you have to start to date first. Mm-hmm. And from there, you can do anything. I really do believe that.
Yeah.
And I honestly think that every woman should know how to do burlesque. I really do. On top of that, there's a book that actually came out here. Actually, one of our professors at UBC, Becky Ross, actually, wrote it last year. And it was about the history of burlesque from the 1940s to the 1980s in Vancouver.
Nice.
Yeah, it was quite interesting where she was describing how it just basically fueled the economy, and it was actually really good because the amount of taxi drivers, the wig makers, makeup, pretty much everything, the hat girls, the coat check girls, all of that, the choreographers, it employed a lot of people, and how it's really changed a lot in the last, in the last 30 years or so.
Mm-hmm.
And now with this new wave of burlesque, which has been going on for quite a while now, which is great, where I'm glad it's here to stay, where in Vancouver, like, there's times where you can see burlesque pretty much 6 or 7 nights of the week.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, even though it'll be a different company each time, it's pretty exciting, where I almost think of it in some ways as mainstream, even though I'm really excited about the festival, because there's going to be a lot of stuff, really, mm-hmm. really, really tightly packed, 4 nights, and I think there's 16 shows altogether, which is great.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
How many outfits do I pack?
How many performances are you doing that
I'm,
you know
I'm
of?
Just doing the one performance.
Well, you might end up doing more, so are you doing
this? Oh, no, I'll get back more costumes.
But in Becky Ross's book, she actually quoted one of the Vancouver Sun columnists, Denny Boyd, who is the late Denny Boyd, who was absolutely hilarious, wherein, again, I'm going to paraphrase very badly, but it's like, you know, you marry the nice girl, and then 5 years later, you realize she could have had a hot dot.
She could have had what?
Had hot dot, as in, like, the sexy girl who knows how to do stuff, because it's important. And have you found, in terms of reception with burlesque in San Francisco, I don't know if it's been different. Like, here, as I was mentioning, it's been very comfortable, fairly mainstream. And I found, especially in the last 5 or 6 years with the pole dancing for fitness, the cardio striptease classes, etc., it's opened it up where there's been more of an acceptance, where there's an appreciation in such a great way, where it's become a real tool for empowerment.
The subculture in San Francisco is still subculture.
Okay.
Drag, burlesque, even though you can catch a drag show or a burlesque show almost every night of the week,
mm-hmm.
It's still regarded as a fad for the newspapers, mm-hmm. and they don't report on the performers. It's very, like, the one of the weekly papers has, like, a photo, like, slideshow where they come and they take pictures of some of the performances that happen, and they'll get, you know, thousands of hits on those images, mm-hmm. you know, that people can see online, but they still don't do, like, a focus on one of the producers or like one of the performers. Nobody knows who people are, except just to see them on the stage.
Mm-hmm. Whereas, I guess in Vancouver it's different. Like, I know for the burlesque festival, they've been in front page of, I believe it was the West Ender paper this week. They've had articles in quite a few different papers, and it's been pretty neat. And I know sometimes for some of the local papers, we'll do, like, the best of.
Mm-hmm.
And with that, where, for example, Melody Mangler, who is one of the screaming chickens ever right now of the...
Oh, fantastic.
Yeah, so it's...
I was so, so impressed with her performance last year at Miss Exotic World, and I was on my feet when they announced her as the winner.
Yeah.
Cheering. So fantastic and beautiful, mm-hmm. and so creative, like her... routine just went through so many phases, and it told such a eloquent story. she just did a really great job utilizing her props and her presentation and her costuming.
She's pretty fantastic. So
yeah, and then you know, and then I get to like eat with her, like you know, at like 4 a.m. And some of the other Vancouver people, so they're probably going to say, "Oh, I remember her. She's wearing her headdress and her costume." Like we just did the roast and toast thing at the Erotic Heritage Museum with Satan's Angel and Bambi Galore and Tanya Cheeks. You know, we were all four of us lit our fire tassels, or five of us lit our fire tassels all at once at the same time, and it was amazing and wonderful. And but then we got home, or back to the casino, like where the hotel was, famished. You know, and I didn't bring a change of clothes. I'm still, like, walking around in my thong and my costume and my headdress and going, how about some eggs? And they didn't blink an eye. It was great. So. Gotta love your burlesque community.
No, they're pretty great. So we've got a pretty awesome one here, too. So I would have loved to have gone to Exotic World, which I've heard very good things about. It is. And it'd be really great to go there and cover it for the show, which would be awesome. But, yeah, I can keep dreaming. So tell me, what's next for you after Vancouver?
I am starting the San Francisco chapter for Naked Girls Reading that was found last year in Chicago. She's an amazing burlesque queen. She won Miss Exotic World in 2005. Mm. She was a finalist in the first season of America's Got Talent. Maybe it was the second season. But anyways, right at the beginning then of that show, then she was up on stage and performing burlesque in front of America and the world. It was amazing.
What is Naked Girls Reading?
Naked Girls Reading is...
Is it like a sexy naked book club?
Well, we come up to the stage, introduce ourselves, drop our robes, and pick up a book, and we start reading from the book.
Reading out loud, or...?
Reading out loud, yes.
Okay, I wasn't sure if it was some sort of nouveau
performance art.
That's what I was wondering. It was kind of reminding me of if the character with Marine from Rent came alive. So something that she might create. So I just, there was that pause there. I just had to verify.
Yeah. So we're, that's it. We're naked girls reading a book. And sometimes there's a theme. Like, sometimes there's, like, one book, like a short book and that you'll read, or there'll be a theme, and each girl in the cast will pick a book that she wants to read a passage from, and then there's, you know, some fun activities and stuff that you do after the reading to kind of keep the momentum and enthusiasm.
I am raising my eyebrow in the DJ booth right now. Do tell.
So this time, I've told the girls, like, after the reading, we've got a burlesque performer that is she's from Seattle, Sugar LaVie, who does a phenomenal Charleston, and while she's stripping, she strips and does a Charleston, and she's this tall, leggy, gorgeous blonde, and she's going to be in her costume and teaching everyone how to do the Charleston. And I told the girls, you can be naked or you can be clothes. I don't care.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you can be naked the entire time if you want to be. That's up to you. I don't care. Like, this is all about you being comfortable in your body and loving, like, showing it off, like, however much you want.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's how the night's going to progress. We charge... $15 like for general seats and $20 for the front row seats.
Well, it'd be neat to have one of those in Vancouver, especially during the festival.
Mm-hmm.
Talking to the powers that be, that'd be very, very interesting, because it'd be nice to see that literally and hear it firsthand, which would be quite interesting. And
yeah, so Last Gasp Books, they are the fathers of underground comic publications, and also a lot of like erotic and dirty comics like Cherry, and then they are our sponsors. They're providing the books to us to read. So
that's fantastic.
And Good Vibrations is our other sponsor.
And literacy is very good. It is an epidemic, so so it is very important today. And however you can get people to read, I think it's really important.
Yeah, we're going to be selling books there, so you can actually like relive your own naked experience when you get home.
I think that's awesome. So if I was doing this interview with you next week and we were talking post-workshop, post-Vancouver International Burlesque Festival, what would you like to be able to tell me happened here?
I'd like to say that a lot of people got a lot out of the class.
Okay.
That people showed up, people were warm and open to what I talked about, and that I learned something from the experience.
Hmm.
I mean, you're never too old to learn. We're constantly like expanding our horizons, or I would hope that people want to expand their horizons, and so that's always a goal for me, and it's especially true with burlesque, is that you can never, like, when you stop learning, if you're a burlesque performer and you can say, I know it all, then you're probably not very good on stage. It's like, even, you know, even the burlesque queens, you know, that have been doing it for over 40 years, they still learn from their students, or like seeing, you know, a new performer like do a routine on stage. Like with fire tassel twirling, then I decided to do an act where I roast marshmallows with the fire.
Hmm.
And Satan's Angel, she's like, no one's ever done that. You're the one and only. You were the first to ever come up with that one. She goes, I never thought of doing that. Like, so we had like a little powwow with the other fire tassel twirlers. And they're like, oh, I want to do that. Can I do, you know, like roast marshmallows with mine? And I'm like, well, I kind of like that to be my thing. Like, if you can come up with your own thing, that would be better for me. And so now there's a girl that uses cocktail weenies, another girl that uses chicken nuggets, you know, like. So it's
I'm trying
so
to vision chicken nuggets. So basically, you can entertain and feed. What man wouldn't want that?
I know. And be funny all at the same time.
Yes, I think that's the answer, too. Like I said, all women should be taking some of these workshops and learning, because I think it's really good, because it empowers men, too.
They are completely 100% welcome to come to my classes.
The men are, too.
And, you know, if they, because men can twirl tassels too, and they can probably spin them really good with those spinners.
I'm just trying to visualize.
So if you wanted to, like, surprise your mate one night and pop off your sweater vest to, like, your down vest and reveal these spinner tassels, and you start twirling tassels, you are so going to get laid.
I am just, as long as they don't set themselves on fire with the down on their chest.
No, we're not teaching fire tassels. That's
okay.
Not part of the lesson plan.
Okay, I just wanted to clarify that. But you never know, because it might be one of those don't try it at homes, boys.
Exactly. Yeah, do not try this at home.
On that note, what are your thoughts on Boyless?
Love it.
Mm-hmm.
I absolutely love it. Dizzy Swank. He puts the burly in burly Q. He's performing on Saturday night.
Hmm.
And the main showcase. He's coming in from New York City to perform.
Nice.
And I really love his acts that he comes up with. And so much fun.
Hmm.
Like the man, like, you know, Tigger's going to be there, the first man to win Mr. Boylesque, you know, Mr. Mm-hmm. Exotic World. He is phenomenal performer. Been in theater his whole life, and then, you know, decides, you know, that he's going to try burlesque, and he's, you know, world famous now.
Mm-hmm.
And then Mr. Exotic World, that won last year, Hot Toddy out of Chicago, he's a supreme dancer. Like, I had to pick my jaw up off the floor several times just based on his dance moves and his sexy stage presence alone. It's like, I think every woman in that audience, whether they were a burlesque performer, a legend, or whatever their craft is, learned from Hot Toddy and what he was able to present in his routine with his costuming and his skills and his choreography.
That's so fantastic.
Yeah, it's. I think
so. Women can learn
is
from
for
men.
Everybody.
It's for everyone.
Yeah, no age, no gender, no limits. Anybody should be able to do burlesque.
Where do you see the future of burlesque? If we're having this interview 20 years from now.
It's still happening in the back alleys of your venues.
So you don't think it'll be mainstream?
Not mainstream. It's still...
I have hope for it being mainstream, so... I really do.
I do, too, but I'm just making a joke. It's never going to go away. You know, it's been around since the 1800s, like, formally, you know, and it's going to keep going on, you know, whether it keeps morphing and changing into something that's more performance art based, or you never know what the next phase is or how, you know, it's going to change, you know, what is going to inspire somebody.
That's true. But as long as people stay inspired, I think that's the real key.
Mm-hmm.
What inspires you?
People in my community, just seeing what other people are, what they bring, like having, you know, conversations about stuff. It's like listening to music. A lot of time, that's usually how I come up with a routine, is listening to music and saying, oh my, and then having that oh my God moment. And like, there, that's it, I'm going to do that. And then I rush home, or I put, you know, start running, you know, going through my costume closet and bags of stuff and say, oh, that'll work. Will that work with that? No, that doesn't work with that. How about that? That works, you know, and, you know, just keep playing the song and repeat over and over and over and say, God, I love this song. I love what I'm thinking of, and just moving your body and just having it all flow and getting together.
What do you do when you get stuck? Do you ever get stuck? Like, how do you push forward?
You get stuck all the time. Just keep doing it, calling people, saying, I really want to do this. Do you think that'll, you know, that this is a good idea? And, you know, and they're usually pretty honest. They're like, are you sure you want to do that? Sounds really challenging, you know? Like, I just stubbed my toe big time a few months ago, like, trying to sing and strip to Led Zeppelin at the same time. And ended up having a severe costume malfunction.
Ow.
But, like, because I had tearaway blue jeans that I made.
That I would have to see. My experience is more pole dancing, actually, so I'm...
So I have the tearaway blue jeans on as I'm hitting the high note and mm-hmm. Whole Lot of Love, and the panties came off with it. But I had a merkin on. But then the merkin started to fall off.
What is a merkin?
A merkin is a glittery jewel or hairy or whatever kind of covering that you want to make for your routine that just covers your crotch, like the juicy parts.
The juicy parts, interesting.
So my was having a bit of flop sweat. And my merkin wanted to come off, and so I had to sit there and, like, hold my merkin while finishing Whole Lot of Love, and I quickly got off the stage as quickly as I could. It was awful.
Oh, no.
We all make mistakes, folks.
We do. What would you say your all-time funniest moment on stage? Would that be it, or...?
Funniest mm-hmm. or favorite? Oh, God, there's so many moments on stage. How
Maybe we'll pick one, and I'm just looking at the time, so we're going to have to wrap it.
It would have to be, all right, the one I always come back to is the masturbateur with Revolting Cocks